Welcome to the NBA Coast to Coast podcast brought to you by thelines.com. Coming to you from the West Coast, Josh Lander, joined by Nate Weitzer. He's on the East Coast. And we are looking at another set of games here, three of them on Tuesday in the NBA playoffs as we roll along with some more game twos. We have best bets up in this video, also got player props up in the other video. So make sure to subscribe to that page and continue to follow along. Also want you to head to thelines.com and use everything we have up on the site right now, including that prop finder tool to make sure you're getting the best odds available to you from all these books that are giving us bets this postseason. Nate, let's go ahead and get right into your first best bet here as we get back into that Phoenix and Minnesota game.
Yeah, game two here, and we're going to go to an SGP that was very successful in the playoffs last year, which is basically, you know, let's go through the scenarios here, and no matter what, win or lose, it seems like the Suns are going to give KD and Book all the shots, and they're arguably leaning on these guys even more now this season, or at this current juncture, because the supporting cast continues to deteriorate and Grayson Allen's hurt. So for both those guys to score 25 is about plus 190 at FanDuel. And I like that more than anything else I was searching in this game. You know, also thought there's a correlation here that, like, if the Suns win, which is a big if for me, and only like a quarter unit bet to involve that in any way, this game's going to go over, right? They're not going to win another 97-87 game, which happened once in one out of three of these regular season meetings. Otherwise, it was them outscoring the Wolves, you know, kind of raining down from deep. But I just think both these guys are going to have success. I mean, KD had plenty of success in game one. I don't think we're worried about him. He is well established in the playoffs, averaged 29 a game, even though he's basically just getting his feet wet with the Suns in the playoffs last year. Basically shared the usage with Book, which is why it's so consistent. They were both about 29-30% usage. Book was way hotter last year. Granted, like, he is not the same offensive force, I guess, you know, kind of shouldering a bigger load as the point guard. But, you know, he was able to average 34 in the playoffs last year. And you look at him bouncing back, and that's, you know, kind of the team thought here, but specifically him after he did get to 18 points on a horrendous shooting night, 5-for-16 in game one, bounced back in the regular season. When they the Suns drop that key game against the Clips, they come back. Book has 37 points on 30% usage, granted, against the Clips backups, whatever. He also had 25 points against NOLA in a bounce-back spot, despite going 0-for-6 from deep, doing a lot of damage at the line down the stretch. And that's key against the Wolves, right? That's one of their few weaknesses here. They did give up 25 free throws in game one. Book is averaging 7.5 free throws his last 10 in down the stretch in the season. He scored 28% of his points on the free throw line against the Wolves this year. So I just think, yeah, such a good player and enough pride to say, like, I'm not going out like this. Like, you're not just going to clown on, you know, you're just like individually throw Alexander Walker or Jaden McDaniels on Book and just take him out of the game. Like, he's going to come right back. Last year, 38, 35, and 47 points after the Suns lost in the playoffs. And then he had 12 in the elimination game against Denver. But yeah, I think we could definitely see a scoring output, outburst perhaps, but at least the 25 points, which is his core prop, by the way.
Right. That's what I was just double checking, actually. I was like, wait, well, this is still just his bet. Yeah, this is his props, which I'm on board with. I didn't put him in here. I wanted to. I looked at him a lot. If you use the D'Lo principle as we're recording this, the Lakers are currently still up by a few points on the Nuggets early in that one. D'Lo, after a 6-for-20 game, came back and just put on 1-for-9 from deep, hit his first three threes. I love that sort of angle in the playoffs moving forward. And Booker is a better player than D'Angelo Russell and is more of the focal point of this offense as well. I thought about the assists, but I think what he can control at this point is the scoring. And I do think that, you know, he wasn't receiving like strong double teams necessarily. It really was just like a bad shooting game, man. That's really just what it came down to. I definitely credit his poor performance that night much more to just a bad night than that Minnesota defense necessarily. But I'm going to move on to that Bucks and Pacers game, another game where I was like, well, look, man, like, I do think there is a lot of shooting disparity here going on, and there were some adjustments made by Indy. So I'm going to take them in the first quarter alone, and they are actually favored by half a point in the first quarter. So the money line is like minus 110, taking the half a point so that you avoid the push is even money. And I just went for that, minus a half for them in the first quarter in this one against Milwaukee. Like, the shooting can't be that bad again. This Milwaukee defense is not good by any means at anything at all. So, like, especially the shooting, especially around the perimeter, where they're a bottom three team in pretty much every zone of the court that is, you know, 20, that's about 15 feet and out, essentially. So the 39% field goal shooting, 21.5% for the Pacers from deep, even the 66.7% from the free throw line, they just couldn't make it from anywhere. And this is a good free throw shooting team. On the season was up in the high 70s, so there's no reason that they shouldn't get right back to there. I think they're going to come back out smoking, and I think Tyrese Haliburton is going to be a big part of that. I would consider some first quarter stuff for him, but you know, he can drive this team passing and scoring, and I don't really want to have to bank on that, but I think I would actually lean on the first quarter, either threes or assists, if you were going to take something for Hallie to really lead this team out the gate. During the regular season, right, these are all anomalies, just to point it out. 48% from the field during the season, 30%. This is versus Milwaukee, by the way, in the five games they played them during the regular season, which includes that play-in stuff. They were much better. They still didn't shoot great from deep in that tournament against them, but 30%, obviously notably better than 21.5% from deep. So that was, there's some positive regression coming for this team, no matter how you put it, especially without Milwaukee having its best defender out in Giannis. The 75 of their shots that they took were uncontested. Like, Milwaukee was happy to go under screens and just sort of play this, like, almost seemingly lackadaisical defense, but almost like daring them to just keep shooting, because they had a bunch of good looks and they just did not hit them, hitting 38% of their uncontested field goals, which you want that way closer to the mid 40s and high 50s if you're open in the NBA, obviously. And I also don't think the other main point here for me is I don't think they're going to play Dame the same way. We saw them switch it up from half to half. In the first half, I came out and thought that we're going to face guard him. We saw Andrew Nembhard, like, right out the gate in the first, like, half of the first quarter, really going at Dame full court, Mr. 90 feet or 92 feet, as we were calling Pat Bev. Like, he still was going, like, Nembhard was doing that for the Pacers, and then stopped. And then Dame went off and had 19 points in the first quarter. And Rick Carlisle let him keep doing that in the second quarter for whatever ungodly reason. Now, Rick Carlisle wants to do that. He wants to kind of play no double teams, everybody straight up, so there's no open shots and spot up shooters. That's been his MO since he came to Indy, and really forever. But, like, you can't do that against Damian Lillard. There's one guy. So he realized that in the second half and completely took the ball out of Dame's hands. He only got five shots up in the second half. And you can make the argument that Dame was happy with 35 points at the half and didn't need any more. I wouldn't make that argument, though. I mean, over five was because they forced the ball out of his hands, if you're watching that game, and they started blitzing him and they started throwing double teams at him, and he didn't have a single point in the second half. And I, like I said, I don't think that would have happened if this game was a little bit closer. He still probably would have gotten up at least five more shots up, let's say, right? Like, I think he still would have doubled his shot attempts in the second half at that point. But I don't think they would have been good looks. I don't think they were going to be good for him. And so the first quarter is going to be a real telltale for Rick Carlisle to be like, yo, I'm coming out with that defense that's just going to make sure he doesn't score and doesn't shoot. If he didn't go 6-for-11 in that first quarter last game, the rest of the team was 4-for-15 from the field. So he really just went crazy Dame on him. I'm not going to predict that once more, because I don't think that this Indiana defense can let him. Look, they're awful. They're one of the worst defenses to make the playoffs that I can remember. But at the same time, if you at least throw 2 to 3 guys at him and play off of the other dudes on the floor, you're going to be in a lot better shape.
Yeah, I mean, one of the themes we can look at here is a positive second half carrying over into game two, which is kind of the look where I'm looking here with the Mavs. But for the Pacers, yeah, I mean, first quarter, first half, pretty much the same odds here. I mean, I think that they're just going to regress positively in terms of their shooting, like that they were, which we were kind of indicating with the series spread pick, that they just were kind of in over their heads with so many guys making their playoff debuts. There's some nerves in the first half, but they got some confidence there in the second half, actually able to hit shots. And so for them, yeah, to be up here at halftime, not a bad look at the end of one. Yeah. Or to score 55 in the first half, which is a pretty low total for a team like Indy, which is going to try to push the pace and continue to get those good shots. But as I alluded to, yes, I am taking the Mavericks -2 at the Clips here. Kawhi Leonard's status still murky. He's officially questionable. Apparently did non-contact practice on Monday, so really don't think so. But I mean, we were wondering about gamesmanship, and it turns out that Ty Lue was pulling gamesmanship in terms of, like, trying to get people, the Mavs, to think he might play. Whereas Harden revealed that they knew for 2 days, they knew since Friday that Kawhi was not going to be out there, and the Clips had their own game plan in place, and they blitzed this Mavs team. I mean, Ty Lue, once again, take your hat off to him, holding a team to 8 points in the second quarter, just completely befuddling Kyrouka with a mixture of coverages in the first half. And then, like I'm saying, in the second half, they combined for 47 points on 64% shooting. James Harden is a guy you look at, you know, has some great game ones recently, and then just like completely falls off a cliff. Like game twos with Philly, 8 points on 3 for 13. He actually had 20 in Miami, disappeared later in that series, 14 points against Toronto, 5 for 28 over two games against Boston after he dropped 45. You remember to start that series, he shot 18% the next two games. And even in the second half of this game, he only had 8 points. He was a negative 16 while out there. So if you're depending on Ivica Zubac being Shaq again, and Daniel Gafford admitted that he just wasn't quite ready to play, and you know, the Mavs just clearly like let their guard down a little bit with Kawhi out and did not come to play as a team initially here. If you're depending on Zubac and Harden to carry this offense again, like I just do not think you can match Kyrouka, which is just like they were a fantastic team down the stretch, maybe playing as good as anybody in the league. We all expect them to make a run, at least have a chance to make a run, at least make this like a 6-7 game series. And so they're going to get a split here. I think we can kind of just like forecast that there's a lot of room for regression here. I mean, the Clippers also shot 50% from deep. They shot 33% without Kawhi this season, scored 4 points per game and went 500. The Mavs are the best win percentage as road favorites in the NBA this year, 20-4. And, you know, the Clippers, as far as some consistency, they've covered in consecutive games exactly twice since the start of February. So I'm not really trusting them to back this up with game two.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, Zubac is in a good matchup, to be honest. So I'm it's not like he's incapable of having good games again. But yeah, I mean, James Harden came out and just, you know, he did what he did last year with Philly, when he just came out and he had like 40 or something when he was playing without Joel in those first two games, right? He had 40 like twice.
45,
like,
yeah.
45, yeah. I mean, that's fine. We know what that gets backed up with when it comes to James Harden in the playoffs. And yeah, Luka losing to the Clippers, I mean, even if they go down 2-0, I'm going to put the house on them in game three because of Luka. So I can see it happening this game. I can see it happening game three. If they go down 2-0, I'm still not going to say they're going to lose the series by any means. Like I might even just find this series goes seven bet to place or something. Cause it's Luka versus the Clippers. End of discussion. It's not over until that man decides that he's just not going to play anymore. And he's going to be doing superhuman stuff probably in this game. And at the very least in game three. So I'm with you on this one for this game. I'm not scared of it at all. Like I think that was the complete outlier. And even if Kawhi comes back with the way that it seems like he's basically doubtful and he does manage to play, I'm not going to buy into being able to do superhuman stuff to drag this team up even further. So yeah, I'm with you on the Mavs in this one, and I'm going to do my favorite thing to do here and close out this portion of our bets with a player prop for Jusuf Nurkić. And that's mostly because I didn't want to like have to go diving into some of the more creative bets. And I feel like we've got a good hold on these first couple games here that we're talking about overall. But for the Suns and Nurkić under 23.5 points, rebounds and assists, like this just ain't his series. You know, I was talking to you a second ago and just saying that you were like, well, do you think he's really going to get pulled and they're going to go small? Cause that is one of my arguments for like why he will likely go under, is that's a possibility. I don't know if it's for sure, but it's a nice little thing to have in our back pocket that's always a possibility, that in two separate games versus the Suns this year, he went cleanly under his minutes average on the season, where he's at about 27.5 minutes. One of them was 24 minutes, another with like 22 minutes against this team. So when he's going to be playing at that amount of minutes, I don't like him to get 24 PRA. I really don't like him to get rebounds and points in general, to be honest with you. And I did like, I actually thought maybe he would come out and dime up a bit more in this last game, which he didn't really have a chance to, but I'm happy to add the couple of assists onto this bet for him to go under as well. He's averaging 15 PRA. He's gone over once in the four meetings he's had now with this team, including this playoff game. And the only game that he went over, there was no Cat in there, and Rudy played limited minutes. So it was like a much different situation. But Cat being down low, like I've been saying it for a long time this season, which is like, yo, Cat looks good on defense this year and is not the liability that he's been. And that, I think that kind of continues to show. Like they were really, really dominant down low with him in this last game. And it's a big reason why they continue to be number one against centers. and everything that Nurk wants to do. They actually had a stretch when Cat was out where they were not in the top 10 in terms of limiting centers' points and rebounds. And that was, you know, for like a 15-day period. But it was still enough of time to be like, wow, the Wolves are not as good as they were without Cat down low. Who would have thought it? And I think the minutes and everything else, like I don't have to dive deeply into like Minnesota limiting points, rebounds, and assists to centers. I don't think they're top five in all of it. And it's going to continue to be the strength of what they do. And I don't think they're going to need to that Rudy is going to be run off the court in this series. Like, I don't think he's gonna be run off the court in any series. If anything, Cat might need to take a little bit of a back seat, but that would only be if the Suns decide to go small. And if they decide to go small, then I guess who's not in the game, right? Yusuf Nurkic. And now without Grayson Allen, I do think it's a little bit less likely. And I'm not saying he's out, but Grayson Allen is hurt and questionable for this game. And if he's not in there, they do like him as a really good undersized rebounder. So I could see that going against my Nurk might play less minutes bet, but our thought process. But even if he does play 26 minutes in this game, which is about what he averages, a little bit more than what he averages against the Timberwolves, I don't think that's enough based on the rates at which he's getting points, rebounds, and assists per minute. It's like 0.12 or whatever against this team, or 0.21 or whatever against this team in the amount of times he's playing. So yeah, that's not going to be enough unless he played like 35 minutes, which there's just not a world in which I see Nurk durable and helpful enough for that amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, you're really trying to read the tea leaves in terms of like what you're crawling inside Frank Vogel's head, I guess. And it's like, is he going to play? Is he going to go small? Is he going to try to exploit the Wolves that way? Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I would just fade the points, I guess, with Nurk, because, yeah, he's not necessarily out there looking to shoot unless it's a favorable matchup. He's a terrible finisher around the rim, and he's going up against Gobert, who will not allow a good field goal percentage. But I mean, he's been very effective in his minutes in terms of rebounding the ball and distributing when they've played the Wolves, and just being that hub that they were able to play around. I don't understand why they yanked
him. Sorry, I have to ask, what do you mean by he's done a good job rebounding? He has one game with 15 boards, and the rest he has 8, 5, 5, and 4.
Yeah, on a per-minute basis, though. I mean, we played 20 minutes in the last one. He was a plus 20, and they yanked him, you know, to kind of just, like, keep pouring on with the small ball, but that did not work at all in game one. So I just think maybe they do have to lean on him a little bit. I don't know. I'm just saying it could go one of two ways here. But yeah, there's more ways to cash this under. I understand where your head's at. Like, yeah, there are different scenarios where he definitely does not put up a lot of stats.
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, you don't have to agree with it either. But yeah, there's always going to be one of two ways that this could go. It's either over or under for sure. And I'm going with the under there. But Nate, let's go ahead and get right into your first one. We're going to pick on Tyrese Haliburton to come back from an underwhelming game one there.
Yeah. We're going to pick on Patrick Beverley not being a complete stopper, basically, if that's what we're indicating, because he kind of like was a no-show in game one, Haliburton, in terms of what he's capable of. So, I mean, I'll take the whole bundle here, 34.5 PRA, which is better odds than just his points or assists. I think there'll be more rebounds available because it's a playoff game, because the Bucks offense just fell apart in the second half after Dame Lillard cooled off a little bit here. I mean, they shot 31% from deep, 42% from the floor in that second half. Pacers, 24 rebounding opportunities, and what, Hallie finished with 8 boards, I think. We had like a 9-7-8 line. That's what it was. Only took 7 shots, and I'm sure there's going to be some internal discussion that, like, we need you to be a little more aggressive here, bud. And he was able to do that. If you think, like, is Pat Bev a Haliburton stopper? I mean, no. His last five regular season games against teams with Pat Bev on him, 27 points a game, 14 assists a game, 5.2 threes at 50%. So I'm intrigued by, like, a little taste here on Haliburton to hit the most threes in this game, which is 4-1 at FanDuel, basically saying like he'll hit more threes than Dame. I don't think there's anybody on the Bucks who's going to catch fire to that degree. Maybe Miles Turner could outscore him in that regard on his own team, but just an interesting look here. I mean, or him to just hit 4 threes, which is definitely plus money as well. I think he'll just come out far more aggressive, and that's how he's been able to beat Pat Bev, who, you know, is just a physical dude, but it cannot match like the quickness off the dribble for Hallie to be able to pull. But I mean, the assist is the most, is probably the most reliable thing here. If you just want to bet 11 assists, right? Because he had 20 potential assists in game one, and the Pacers shot 21% from deep. That's not something that's going to continue against the Bucks team that gives up threes pretty consistently, packed in the paint, denied them in the paint. And the Pacers are going to have to make them pay here. And I think these passes that Halliburton have been spraying out are going to result in assists a lot more often once the series starts to settle in.
Yeah, seems likely. I'm with pretty much everything for Tyrese. I do think he's going to come to play. It was the first playoff game. I know he hasn't quite looked like the same dude since he got hurt, but you know he's been definitely coming back on over the last couple of weeks, and I wouldn't just count him out by any means at this point. So I'm with that for sure. I'm going to take another dude, I believe, from the same draft class. Can't remember now, with Ant being number one and Hallie being in there. Might have been the year after. But I'm taking Ant Edwards because I think Ant delivered on what we all thought was going to be a very impressive performance moving forward, like in the playoffs from this dude. Like, is there anybody that resembles Michael Jordan more? Can I just come out and say it? Nobody does. Ant Edwards is a complete man unto himself. I'll say that. I agree with him with what he said a couple weeks ago where he was like, yo, I'm gonna be the best player in the league in 2 years. And I was like, yeah, you are. I agree with you. And so I'm gonna take him to keep going with his legacy. I'm gonna take the points and assists over 30.5. I'm okay with the rebounds. It's at six. So it's like you get this 36 and a half PRA. Don't hate it by any means, but there's other dudes who are out there to strictly board. And I think Ant, as aggressive as he's going to continue to be, we'll just stick with the points and assists. And here's two interesting numbers. 41% usage rate for the like third or fourth year player in the NBA in his first ever playoff game, third year player, right? So yeah, this is a dude who's prepared.
Definitely right not his moment. First playoff game though. You gotta correct.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. He did come out there last year. That's right. The first year where it's so clearly his team, right? How about that? Because Kat is like, okay, my bad. It's your squad, bro. And so now moving forward for him, I think that will be the case. Like there's nobody that he needs to defer to or ask if it's okay for him to keep shooting. The 41% usage rate I just told you about should really indicate that. Also a 30% assist rate, by the way. So he is the dude with the ball in his hands. He had 56 passes made and 9 potential assists. So I still think, you know, for him to get like 5 to 6 assists is a very good number here. And I also think, by the way, the reasoning for that is that of the assists that he had in this last game, the majority of them also came right around the rim. There was only one kick out for three that he had on those potential assists that turned into an assist. Everything else is right around the rim. So he is a dude that's going to keep giving, like, and by the way, there's really no other 3-point shooting on this team very often on the floor, which is a big reason for why everything he's looking for the dimes is down low. So I use that to say, like, I don't think he needs, I think we can bank on like a pretty high assist rate for all of his potential assists, right? Like 5 on 8 or 6 on 9 potentials and assists is very reasonable for him. The other thing is 89 touches. That's the really amazing part to me, is that nobody came close. Like Paolo and he were far away, the two dudes just having the ball in their hands the whole time for their teams, as we saw in Game 1 for that Magic series as well. I say that because Paolo also had about 90 touches, and the next closest person was Franz at about 65 or 70, and that's the exact case here for Ant in this one, was that nobody else had anywhere near 89 touches. Conley had 69 touches, nice, but that was about that nobody else even touched 60 at that point, right? So that's the dude with the ball in his hands, and it's just like, go and do what you need to do. That's going to be the case again if this is a little bit closer, right? Like I do anticipate this being a little bit closer than a blowout, which, by the way, the blowout is going to happen when you have one team that can't hit anything. The other team is very hot from three and a much better defensive team. That's going to happen with the way the Bulls blew them out. So I'm not too worried about that. Like they don't get to take those extra points with them and use them for Game 2. So I still think the Suns are in a good spot to be able to come back. And if that's the case, now you're talking about the only dude who shoots in the fourth quarter for this Minnesota Timberwolves team being Ant Edwards, right? Could have not necessarily a candidate for clutch player of the year, but he was somebody who had a ton of fourth quarter points, a ton of clutch points as well. And is someone that I think will have the ball in his hands a ton, no matter what in the fourth quarter. And as he has, like basically every quarter was the fourth quarter for Ant in this one. So like he would take a really bad shooting night. He even had 3 fouls in the first half and didn't get that many minutes, 10 points in the first half, and still ended with the 36 that he had. So I'm going to go right back to him. I don't think there's anybody on there. Like they didn't play, maybe Josh Okogie didn't play him enough, that's for sure, to be able to stop Ant, but I don't have a good answer for Ant Edwards on the Suns to limit him in any way that makes me go, yeah, maybe we should be worried about him getting his points and assists. You're right.
Somehow they limited him in the regular season, and I guess Grayson Allen deserves a lot of credit, because like what he goes out this game and Ant just like leaves his body. But I mean, you brought up Mike Conley, and I think that's the key here, is that Conley can't really defend these guys on the Suns. Like he played 27 minutes, 5 fouls, 2 for 12 from the floor. And so then it's just like Ant is both the point guard and the shooting guard, and Kat's not fully healthy, and Kat might, you know, Kat also played limited minutes because he can't guard KD. So yeah, that was what you were circling around in terms of like, it's really his team, like the usage rate, 41%. His last four, when Conley just didn't play straight up, 35% usage, 31.7 assists, and 48% from three. So I think he stays hot. You know, he just, you get more comfortable when the ball's in your hands that much. And he was just pulling these insane shots that were going down there in game one. So yeah, got to ride the hot hand here.
Yep.
Both of my props here are about a little fade of Pat Beverly, I guess, is that Halliburton's going to get his, and Pat Bev, who's not really out there to play offense, is going to have a little regression here in terms of the points and assists, 11.5 points and assists under, please. I mean, he didn't necessarily, he only had 5 points in game one in the 37 minutes, even on a per 36 minute basis with the Bucks, he's averaged 4.5 assists. He had 8 assists in game one on just 10 potential assists. So that's basically saying only two times did they not knock down the shot that was randomly kicked out by Bev here. He only has an 8.5% assist to pass ratio with the Bucks. So these are not high quality or high value passes being kicked out. 13% usage with the Bucks in general, but only 7.5% in this playoff game as Dame and Bobby Portis taking up all the shots that they can get their hands on here. I mean, where's he even going to score from? Like, the Pacers limit three-point attempts more than anybody since the All-Star break. They have these young guards flying around, chasing him off the line. I mean, Pat Bev is a guy who might hit a couple threes to get some points, but I don't really think that anything consistent is going to happen when he goes to the basket. And I just expect some regression with the assists here. Pacers also didn't give up many assists at all on the season because they foul people, right? I mean, that being one of the reasons. But yeah, I mean, just fade his offense. He's not out there to play offense.
I had some people online being like, "Yo, what do you think about Pat Bev props?" And before game one, and I was like, "What? Who is betting on Pat Bev props overs?" Yeah, I think it was a wonderful opportunity. It brought to my attention that Pat Bev had a really good game because I was looking for him to be like, "Is this dude right? Should I have bet on overs for Pat Bev?" And he had a good game one, but it just made me hyper aware of like, "Well, okay, so are you going to raise his props for me for game two so we can go under?" And I would agree with you entirely that the assists for Pat Bev are it's just like, once Dame gets the ball out of his hands, or I should say the Pacers get the ball out of Dame's hands and it's in Pat Bev's, it's like, you trust him to be the dude now making plays? I don't. But it's highly correlated to what I'm talking about here. I mean, I'm taking an under on Dame's assists. And I mean, that's not necessarily what's correlated. I'm just saying like Pat, like I think that ball is going to have to get taken out of Dame's hands because the Pacers are going to do what they did in the second half of that game where they waited till they were down by 30 to actually play defense on Damian Lillard the correct way. And that's going to be to blitz him and force it out of his hands and make Pat Bev make decisions. And I don't think he's going to be successful at that. As bad as this Pacers defense is, I still don't think he's going to be very successful at that. But I'm going under on the assist for Dame because I really, really wish I would have done that in game one, too, considering that I was like, you know, I'm going to wait to see how this Pacers team plays him. And then once they started not blitzing him and just letting him get shots up, it was like, all right, probably take an over on the points and an under on the assists. And I think you could still do that because I can't guarantee you, like I can't, you know, like you were saying earlier, I can't climb into Rick Carlisle's head and say, yo, they're going to make sure that Dame gets the ball out of his hands as soon as he crosses half court. That's what they did that worked the best in the first game, though. So I'm going to at least bank on that being something he can turn to. So with that, like once they blitz him, right, the assist, you would think that just because they're going to take the ball out of his hands, they're going to get fewer. That makes an opportunity for him to get more assists. But I don't think that's the case because he's basically going to have to get the ball out of his hands very quickly, like not even anywhere near the 3-point line, that level of quickly, because there's no other way to beat this team if Dame's going to do that or come close to the performance he had in the first half. So he had 11 potential assists in game one and only managed to get 3 of those. And that's kind of how I see this going, is like once he gets rid of the ball, I think maybe hockey assists are more likely for Dame, is an easy way to say what I'm trying to say, which is he's going to have to get rid of it in a situation where now the defense is imbalanced, but there's still somebody guarding the guy that he just passed to. There's nobody guarding the other guy that the secondary guy can now pass to for those hockey style assists. And that's what we saw Dame accrue a bit more of in the second half of last game. When he accrued those potential assists, it was like, yeah, well, that those turned into secondary assists, essentially, right? For the Pacers, we've talked about this a lot all season. They don't give up assists in general. And it's because they try not to double team too much until Dame Lillard scores 35 and a half. And then they have to in the second half of that game last game. Five games versus Indy this year, 9.6 potential assists and five total a game for him against this squad. Under in 4 of 5. And Giannis was in for the game that he went over, which was their first meeting against this team. And I know that he gets about one more assist per game without Giannis on the floor this season in the 9 games that he played in the regular season without him. But that one of those games was against the Phoenix Suns, who are just awful, awful against point guards. And he had 16 assists on 20 potentials in that one. So that's skewing these numbers a bit in those 9 games that he played without Giannis. For sure, there was another game where he also had about 13 assists without Giannis. And after that, we're talking about like 5-5-5-5-4-3-6-6, right? Like not very many assists for him at all in those situations, because it's like you know that this is the dude. So you cover him tightly, and you cover the only people that are right close around him that he can make an easy pass to tightly, and that limits assists in general. Without Giannis against other teams too, 6 of the 9 games that he played without Giannis this year, he went under 7 assists in those and had 6 in one of them, seven exactly in one of them, so butted up right against it. But like I was saying, like the way that the double team is going to be coming at him in this game is not necessarily like, okay, force it out of his hands, which means there's an open shooter in the corner. It's just force it out of his hands and then scramble to try to get back, but probably give up an open three to guys like Pat Bev, Pat Connaughton, maybe some Malik Beasley, who wasn't really made for that last game either. But I don't trust any of that, and I don't think that's going to lead to Dame assists at all. So I'm going to take under 7 for him.
Yeah, I mean, your main point here is he's not Luka Doncic. He cannot jump and you know, spray the ball to the corner over a double team, and he's not big like Jokic. And yeah, I mean, if you double Dame, it's somebody else who's got to make the decision. That makes sense. I mean, also look at the Bucks as a team. Like, we're both fading assists here with Giannis out. They average 4 assists fewer, 23.3 assists in these 9 games without Giannis, which would be worst in the NBA aside from only the Portland Trailblazers this year. So, I mean, yeah, they're not scoring or they're not bending the defense because they don't have Giannis there. And the Pacers should do a much better job of corralling Dame and company here.
Yep, 100%. So, they should win this game if everything goes according to plan for them, but not necessarily something that I have any money on yet. But that is all the time we have for you in this player props video. Also have best bets up in a separate episode, so make sure that you are checking that out. Subscribe to the page and continue to follow along with us the rest of these playoffs. And until we see you next, happy betting.